Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Good morning, everyone. That was the voice of Brian Brown, our founder. We miss him every day. And I'm Lynn Kerrigan, your rotating host of the Brown Briefly's for today, like a ham on a spit getting burned at every turn. What a week, man. Yowzer. The election nears, the news is heating up, and the candidates are displaying the full plumage of their colors, which we will get to in a moment. With me today, from the relative comfort of their homes and at the mercy of limited internet bandwidth, are the Briefly commentators. I've upgraded us from pundits to commentators with a mission to make sense of the national news, or at least make fun of it. Please welcome Bruce Hallman, history professor, local historian, and author, who rips off his tweed jacket in the sound booth to come our revered guardian of the galaxy with his Thor's hammer, the long view forged with facts. Bruce, how are you? I saw you made a film, a video for Vachon Resilience, and you're...
Yes, yeah, it's part of the time exchange that Vachon Backbone Campaign has set up. And so they've done 2 weekends sort of teaching sessions on Saturdays. And last weekend's was geology, Steve Bergman and Tom DeVries, and my six-year-old grandson, who is a budding geologist, just loved it. It's worth going to the Backbone Campaign site and looking at what they have on offer. Join the time exchange. It's a way for you to basically exchange time for various things that you have skills at, to get help with things that you don't have skills with.
Very cool. Anything up with the museum that I should ask you
for
about?
For the museum, it's interesting times because we're closed because of COVID, because of the nature of what we do. We're a small space. And so what we've been doing is trying to take the museum out of the museum to the community. So if you've been downtown Vachon and walked along the street, we've got a Vachon town tour with plaques on each building, giving the history of that building. We're working with the Ellisport exhibit group to develop a walking trail in Ellisport, similar to the Dockton Heritage Trail. And then we're looking forward to, if you guys on the radio can't see it, but the Briefly's can. Behind me is a photograph of the Page Barn, which is the oldest barn on Vachon. And we're trying to arrange a drive-by barn tour for next year. Because there's some great old barns on Vachon.
Wonderful.
In this time of COVID, when you don't want to be in closed spaces and you don't want to be close to other people, the museum is trying to find a way to be a museum in the community rather than in a particular space.
So. I love it. You guys are so creative.
Great.
And also, let me get our introductions down. Groundbreaking Renaissance man, carpenter, landscaper, philosopher, singer, thespian, Michelangelo Shook, who has just recorded a radio play to be aired next week. Tell us about it, Michael.
Wow, thank you. Boy, those are some introductions, as well as for Bruce. And I got to say, Bruce, that's also a really cool looking old pickup in that picture, too. I kind of have a thing for stuff like that. But we're Vachon Repertory Theater. It's been fun. I'm honored to be able to work with such talented folks. I mean, people say that, but really, there's a whole bunch of pros in there that it's like, wow, you folks have some great experience and are able to guide those of us with lesser experience so that the end result we hope is something that's entertaining and fun or informative or moving, whatever.
What's the play?
October 31st, at 7 p.m. and 11 p.m. on Voice of Vashon 101.9. The War of the Worlds will be it's the original script from 1938. And as folks have said, there's a there are some interesting parallels, particularly with bacteria and viruses and things. So it should be really fun to tune into. And one last thing, it's the Dodgers have made it into the World Series. As we all know, they were cheated out of a World Series title by the lousy Astros, who got bounced. So this is all good. And an interesting anecdote that I read, in the last inning of the game Sunday, where they made it into the series, a mystery pitcher came out and closed out the ninth inning for the Dodgers. No one seemed to know where he came from. He was wearing a Brooklyn Dodgers uniform from the 50s, a lefty who threw a lot of curveballs. No number on his jersey or anything, just the initials BB on the back of it. And then when the manager and the press went to look for him after the game, there was no sign of him.
BB?
So, I don't know what this means.
Mysteries galore. I'm sure you'll fill us in on that later.
Halloween's coming up.
A minute ago, you just heard Kevin Jones, political activist warrior, who salts all of his contributions to us with news from Indivisible Vashon and its commitment to progressive values and political engagement and democratic integrity. And Kevin, you were on Real Talk not long ago. What was that about and how did it go?
Oh, you know, Susan invited me to help her kick off her week of politics on Real Talk. So yeah, we talked about the path to the White House for our favorite progressive candidate and the path to change the Senate so that our least favorite senator in the world, Mitch McConnell, no longer wields the power that he has. So yeah, it was very good. I will say that another thing that's come up recently is all of the things we've heard from our beloved president about fraudulent mail-in ballots and the election. The only way he'll lose is if the election is rigged. And fortunately, there's a coalition of groups forming in Washington, of which I have proudly joined. And we're going to talk about that. Tomorrow is our Indivisible Vashon monthly meeting starting at 7 o'clock. So if you want to hear about what's happening on that front and how you might get involved, just make sure that those votes that we all carefully cast are all counted. Please join us. IndivisibleVashon.org. Go to our calendar and you can register for the meeting.
Thank you, Kevin. Wow. I will also welcome back to our fold, who is substituting for Susan McCabe, our friend Gail Kellner, creative writer and free spirit, who's returned to Vashon after sabbatical on Lopez, where she finished and found a publisher for the book that she was driven to write as her antidote to despair. Tell us about it, Gail.
Well, you know, I was a teacher for many years, and I began to hear students just be so disheartened about the future, as well among young adults, that including my own two sons. And I began to think, well, we need a story out. So, you know, sort of into a new paradigm and into a new way of thinking and maybe being. So I imagined a world seven generations in the future, and in which we had achieved social justice as well as environmental sustainability and peace. And I held myself accountable to the standard of, besides the fact it being a fanciful story in the future and that it's based in the future, but that it's based in scientific possibility as well as legal and historical precedents. So
wow.
It's a world that could be. Now, whether it is or not, that will be up to all of us to, you know, to determine. And of course, I don't know that it will come out just the way I imagine. But The story is called Hope, A History of the Future, and it imagines a history book from the future falling into the library of this family home, and all of the family members who pick this book up and begin to read about what happens in the future. And it was picked up by the winner of the 2019 Independent Publishers Award, Sparks Press. And they're also called She Writes Press. They have two insignias. And they will be publishing the book. So I'm in the process of editing, which is, I've been working on this book for 4 years. And I think it's going to be another two before, practically before, another year and a half before it's all done and said. I had no idea what an undertaking I had started.
But, yeah. Congratulations. I think that's great.
It shows us what a miracle a book is as we hold it in our hands. So many hours invested in making that book.
Right.
And let me call out in the studio today, deftly wielding the magic Zoom connections and microphones and mix board and internet fact checking and sound effects. Maybe there's a sound effect.
Oh, geez, sorry. Right. Was there one in here that I missed? Oh, gosh, how did that happen?
Dogs.
Aren't they getting that one. Oh, gosh, I forgot all about that.
See, Don't worry about it.
Look what happened. You know,
he's our illustrious engineer, pilot of the airwaves, and even-tempered reporter from the right, Truman O'Brien. I should temper that and say, Truman himself makes no claims to either side.
That's right.
Truman is an independent.
I'm a reporter. That's it.
There you go. So, Truman, we're going to have to start paying you more.
I think you should double my salary, actually, which is zero now. So, you know, I mean.
Oh, dear. And as we said earlier, Susan McCabe is on sabbatical right now through the election. And, Truman, do you know what her show will be today?
Actually, I do, and I can even do better than that. Susan is at my side as we speak. So,
excellent.
Susan, why don't you tell us what your show is today?
As I loom over the engineer, I have taken the sabbatical to spend the 4 weeks of October on shows that discuss politics is personal. And today I am really thrilled to have Kathleen Rogers, who is the president of the Earth Day Network, Earth Day 2020, out of Washington, D.C. She's going to talk to us about the potential impact of the elections coming up in November on the climate and, of course, on each one of us in our backyard. And I am hoping one day to have Gail Kellner on Real Talk to talk about the history of the future. I'm looking forward to that.
Cool.
Me too.
You guys are amazing. You men and women of the past, present, and future, I salute you. Thank you. You know, today we're going to look at the shifting landscapes and subterranean connections of politics, money, demographics, social justice, the workings or the malfunctions of government, personalities large and small, and the guiding principles of our laws in trying to hold together 50 distinct states and several territories in our democratic experiment of a country where all people are named to be equal under the law. We're seeing that is not so. The Constitution did not address unequal representation under the law it enshrined, and there's now a great reckoning. We're at a turning point in history, and we can't really deny any longer the injustices required to maintain such imbalances. And yet we are having a hard time channeling our anger and fear into productive sources of civil discourse. Each election is a new opportunity to turn the ship of state, and this is a big one. So I welcome you to another week of kind of commentary about the national news and its implications. I do want to make a very quick correction before we leap into the news and mention that we gave you some misinformation, sort of, or incomplete information last week when I asked the question about registering to vote and when the last day was to get registered to vote on that November 3rd election. And I've been on the county website. It's an interesting set of requirements. You can register online 24 hours a day. You'll need a driver's license or an ID up to, so the deadline for registering is October 26 for online registration. You can go to a voting center, and in Seattle and King County, that's like Federal Way in the community center and the University of Washington. I don't know if we have one here. I should have looked that up, but people who can go in person to the electoral center in Renton can still vote, still register to vote up till the day of the election, up through the day of the election. Normally you can download forms and send it in. It's just a little bit late for all of that. So I'm just saying, please register to vote by October 26th if you haven't. Okay.
Right. And I think, Lynn, we do have up until the 26th for people to register online. So there's still some time to do that.
I think that's 26th. What I said. Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I did also take a look, and I agree. I think the office on Grady Way in Renton is where folks from our area would find on the website to go in and actually register in person after that date. So I really appreciate you taking a look at that, correcting the record for us.
Right. And if you have questions about it, the King County Electoral Office phone number is 296-VOTE, V-O-T-E, which is 8683. All right. This is an enormous week of news. Hard to sort of narrow down kind of things to talk about. But, you know, my interests are in the debates that happened with the president and Joe Biden, and in the progression of Amy Coney Barrett's hearings for her election, and on some of the things like the COVID relief package, where some of these things are, that if there's anybody who, you know, is influenced by these in their vote, you need to know the facts about it. So let's start just briefly with Amy Coney Barrett. Did anybody watch any of those hearings and have any feelings about her as a candidate or anything about it? Gail?
I did watch the hearings. I mostly watched senators talk and Amy herself didn't have much opportunity during the times that I was tuning in anyway to say much. However, I did note something quite significant as one Democratic senator made the statement that most people support a woman's right to abortion. I saw her eyebrow lift high above her mask. And I realized in that moment that she and I may live in separate bubbles, that she seemed through that very, you know, clear expression that she doubted that as fact. And so I, realizing that, you know, I live in a bubble, she probably lives in a bubble, I went and did, you know, my general understanding is that about 60% of people nationwide support abortion, a woman's right to choose. But it actually turns out that if you live in some place like Alabama, for example, she's actually from Louisiana, but they're almost indistinguishable in many ways from one another, deep south, that it actually is closer to 60% of the people are against abortion, period. And so I realized that the country, we don't have a shared experience around this.
Yeah, you're talking about what used to be known as the Bible Belt and is now called the Sun Belt. So it's not quite so bold a commentary. Thank you. Anybody else kind of have, you know, comments about that? Michael?
I didn't watch the any of the hearings or anything like that. I, you know, following it, reading news things and all that. I think it's interesting. It points up again what you brought up last week, Gail, and what we just sort of touched on, Justice Ginsburg's comment back in the 90s, I think, in a speech that she gave, saying she really wished that the Roe versus Wade decision had been different because she saw progress coming in the States. And in her wisdom, I think she foresaw this kind of divisiveness and everything. And it's interesting to note that this is a fairly recent stance that so many people who identify themselves as conservatives or who are deeply religious, this opposition to abortions was not in evidence at all back in the late 50s, 1960, even into the early 1960s. It was a non-issue. It really was. It's amazing. You can go back and look all that stuff up, and it's like, wow. It was something that people felt like, well, that's not an issue. And I think that whole cultural revolution that took place in the 60s and early 70s, we saw the rise of the moral majority and evangelical television networks springing up. This is another way that they use that medium to reach all across the country in ways they never had before, very slickly produced shows. And that actually that was a big part of all of a sudden, now it's an issue. Now we've got to stand steadfast against abortion any way, shape, or form. So it's
well, I might say, I don't want to get into the emotional place that I got into the last time we talked about that. I'm not the best person to contribute to this subject because I'm so passionate and biased and personally affected by it. So I can't do that. But I will say, when you say something like that was not an issue, I beg to differ, because I think that has always been an issue for women, unwanted pregnancies throughout history. Mm-hmm. And to say it's not been an issue is overlooking all of those women. So yeah. I think that's I'd like to get into that at another day, when we're not dealing with an election.
If I could just jump in and say that I'm glad you brought that aspect of it up, Lynn. I was speaking in a really broad, generalized political sort of thing, but of course women have sought many different ways to control their reproductive systems throughout millennia. So yeah.
Did I see another hand go up there?
If I can get a word in edgewise here, it was not an issue because it was illegal in every state in the United States.
Thank you.
And so that's why it was not an issue, because it was just flat out illegal. You know, once it became an issue and it began to be fought over, that's when it becomes an issue. And that's when you begin to get this sort of fundamentalist religious divide developing in the United States. So for women, it's always been an issue. Politically, in the 1950s and before, it was not an issue because it was dominated by male politicians and it simply was illegal. So you weren't able to even talk about it.
Important to remember that women were considered chattel for a long time and didn't get the vote till 1920 also. Gail, I saw your hand go up.
Go ahead, Kevin. You had a thought. I'll follow that.
Well, I didn't want to interrupt the discussion of women's right to choose. But I can tell you that what I saw in the assessment, I didn't watch the hearings, but the scope of the influence of the Supreme Court on areas of law are pervasive. And the idea that it's not only women's right to choose, right, it's employment issues, it's voting issues, it's climate issues, it's money and elections issues. And the challenge is, I mean, we sort of, for a time, it was like, geez, we hope a couple of senators come down with COVID so they can't vote, which is a really awful place to be, to say that's the only recourse we have. The votes are there, right? We are really facing this as our future, and it's going to outlive probably all of us with such a young justice who will be there for a generation or more. So, it's just something I think that we have to see as a reality going forward. It's not a done deal yet. Some senators may indeed change their opinion, but it's important to reach out and make sure that if we know senators who are in that decision making, who live in those states, who are not going to, who might be inclined to not vote for this candidate, these are the things at risks that we'll have to face. So it's important to reach out to our networks and make sure our voices do rise up about if we oppose this, we should, and loudly.
Thank you, Kevin, for broadening that and getting us out of that rabbit hole, because that is a dark chapter in our lives, and it remains at issue. Someday I'd like to see another real talk or some, solid exploration of some of the particular issues. But thanks for talking about all of the things that may be affected by this justice. And it reminds me of, that we also passed through the debates, the town halls, I can't call them debates, but town halls that were last Thursday, when Trump was on NBC after refusing to meet for an actual debate and interviewed by Savannah Guthrie, and Joe Biden, if I didn't say this right, Trump was in Miami being interviewed by Savannah Guthrie, and Joe Biden was in Ohio, I think. And I chose to watch the Trump debate just to see what he was going to say and how he would be handled by a different moderator. And I'm curious what y'all watched and what you got from the debate and what stayed with you. Anybody want to go with that? Not the debate, the town hall.
I didn't watch it. I just don't watch stuff. But what I read, I was very impressed with Ms. Guthrie's questions and her ability to stay calm. She's an experienced lawyer, and I think that really helped. And call him on some of his stuff. The thing that stuck with me the most was when she said, but you're the president. It's not like you can just retweet anything like someone's crazy uncle.
Exactly. That stayed with me too.
So finally someone.
So the thing that I loved was that somebody wrote, this is the only time that Trump could beat himself in a debate. So not only he lost the debate, but it was against himself. So I thought that was pretty good.
The latest Pod Save America, or at least one of them this last week, these are former Obama staffers, for those who are not listeners of Pod Save America. They basically said, we're all for Trump having every opportunity to debate and be heard by the public, because it just exposes some of his values, which need to be removed from the White House. So, yeah, totally agree with you.
Any other comments?
Well, it'll be very interesting Thursday's debate, where the moderator has the ability to shut down the microphones. I suspect that we'll see Trump just go ballistic at some point Thursday night, and that will help penetrate some balloons around him, not many, probably some. So it'll be a very interesting debate when he's actually cut off from his microphone, whether he'll try and shout over that, or whether he'll charge across the stage or whatever. It'll be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, you can see it coming. And I mean, it's this intriguing, right, this electorate that we have. And some are like, you hear the commentary about suburban women voters are just so completely turned off by this aggression. And I can clearly not... having shared their gender, I can certainly share that they have a history of experience, which would be really rejecting any of that kind of an approach. But that's what Trump is going to be motivated to do. Oh, by the way, I'm just looking at his approval ratings, and they're on the decline. They're now his disapproval is up to 53.5%. His approval is down to 42.8% and falling. And that's a trend I do like to see personally.
But Kevin, he's promised to help himself.
He doesn't seem. It's like watching a 4 or 4.5 year old in an adult's in an aging adult's body. It's remarkable the things that he comes out with is. Constant lies, and if someone tries to point something out, he tells an even bigger lie on top of it, and seems utterly, you know, constitutionally unable to stifle his impulses to just bully and be belligerent and try to shout someone down. It's the man is sick. It's just,
yeah. I have said that for a long time. Kevin, was that your hand going up?
No, I was. I'm glad you amplified that. You know, I think it was 27 psychologists wrote the book on Trump, and I think the second iteration of the book had more people coming out and talking about him. Not only that, his niece, right, who is also trained in this area. I think, you know, Michael, it is a lifetime of what works for him. The Cohn, is it Roy Cohn, was the creator of that type of how you engage with the rest of the world. And, you know, if you have hundreds of millions of dollars, I guess it works out pretty well for you.
Yeah.
What worries me perhaps the most about his behavior is that it is emboldened other people to act that way. And I am afraid that we are going to see that for many years to come. I hope not. I hope that, you know, he gets called out. I hope he gets put in prison. I hope that, you know, obviously he doesn't stay on any longer in the White House. But I do worry about the legacy of that kind of belligerence and lack of respect for truth going forward.
You know, related to that, Gail, I think what we're talking about now is we're hearing many people talking about, is this a case, this election a case of the soul of the nation? Who are we? What do we want? And I've been reading pretty extensively about that, just the whole idea of what the American spirit is in its dark forms and in its light forms. And I've come across just some of the most amazing kind of theories about it. But if I were to ask each of you to say, what do you think the soul of America is? What would you say?
Well, for me, it goes back to Abraham Lincoln's speech about the better angels of our nature. It's been a very, very deeply ingrained within the American experience. And I mean, we've had some dark periods. We have there's a dark side to the American experience, certainly. But there's also a light side, you know, the force is with us, if you will. And it's that appeal to the better angels of our nature. And I think for most Americans, that is an appeal that resonates. I mean, you certainly have always had, you know, a 10, 15, 20% fringe element that's going to, you know, believe everything from Father Divine to Amy Simple McPherson to, you know, the neo-Nazis to white power, whatever, Ku Klux Klan. I mean, the list is long, and that's the dark side of it. But to me, you know, America has a very strong better angels of our nature embedded within us, and that's what gives me hope.
And maybe this is just a human quality, but, you know, I think of the car that's rolled over and all the people come rushing up, and it doesn't matter who you are. They jump in and they push the car off of the person and save them or whatever. But that to me is the American spirit. Now, maybe that's just a human spirit, but it really strikes me as being very much an American thing.
Really engaged, you mean, and kind of willing to act them,
exactly.
And when they should in the right way.
Yeah.
Usually. Yeah. Anybody else? Kevin.
Yeah, I was going to say that for me, I think it's this promise, not delivered, but this promise of equality. I was you know, thinking about, and I'm a third generation American, right? My great grandmother and her family came from Italy, and grandfather and my grandfather from Ireland, and my father from Wales, which clearly had a more, you know, a more white centered heritage than any of the others. But the fact that, you know, my father, he lost his dad when he was quite young, and basically grew up in small town Marysville, and had to really work hard He didn't, he clearly had white skin like I do. He was clearly a male. He had privilege, but nonetheless, he had to work pretty hard, and he did well, and gave me tremendous privilege going forward. But it's clearly not true for everybody. And according to others who've looked at this, right, there is no truly equal, multicultural, multiracial government on the face of the earth, nor has there ever been. Yet the United States claims that that's what we offer. And I think that we have tremendous opportunity to make that true. And it's not so much that it's just all about equity. There's true advantages to really bring people together that have the diversity of experience and knowledge. When I worked, we talked about multi-talented teams or multidisciplinary teams. Just the act of adding more points of view into anything you do adds strength and durability to that. It's a recipe for success. Yet many are turning their backs on that because they fear the outcome. They see that their privilege will be diminished. Whereas the greater outcome, I believe, is that we can all be more prosperous and benefited. So it's a challenge, but that's what I see.
Michael,
that's a great point, a great viewpoint as well, Kevin. And I think that's what's so important about having a leader who can say to people, this is our potential. This is who we can be. We're human and we're deeply flawed. And yet we can, we can set that bar high the way that we have, and we can really strive to achieve that. And that's where I'm hopeful about. When I look at my kids and their generation, they're in their 30s now, and some of my nieces and nephews are pushing 40. And the way they're raising their kids and the choices that they are making, there are so many things that they are able to make an action. They're embracing more than maybe past generations did. So it's really, it's a wonderful thing. And if I could just for a second, I've been reading Abraham Lincoln lately, and he writes at the end of his first, what you said, Bruce, at the end of his first inaugural address, he says, "We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. Though passion may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection, the mystic cords of memory, stretching from every battlefield and patriot grave to every living heart and hearthstone all over this broad land will yet swell the chorus of the Union when again we are touched, as surely they will be, by the better angels of our nature."
It is a moving piece. And would we benefit now from having a leader who had such a soaring view of America and its importance in the world and how to breach some of our differences? I'm moved by those things too, Michael. They just touch me really deeply. And in my reading of Jill Lepore's This America, The Case for the Nation, I ran across some of the founders' ideas about America. And the phrase that struck me was that they saw it as an asylum for mankind. It was a place where people of all kinds could come together under this overarching umbrella of liberty and freedom. Mm-hmm. And there was a, that's true and believable for me. And then she goes on to say how we have not lived up to that in many ways, certainly with our treatment of Native Americans and African Americans, and that the Constitution did not foresee. They lived in that era where slavery was part of their water, the air they breathed, and they did not understand that somebody that we brought here and counted as 3/5 of a person for the purposes of the census, because there were more blacks in South Carolina than there were whites, that we didn't solve that problem with the Constitution. And now we have other people kind of really asking for their share of the American pie and the American dream. And I was really moved this week by an article that was by one of the preachers, Carrie Anderson in Seattle, who said, we have to mourn our failures and our losses before we're going to be able to settle out what we need to do to get to unity, that there's years of anger and displacement, and that we need to be lamenting and acknowledging everybody's role in this in the past and the present, and try to move forward with maybe a more perfect union. Kevin.
I definitely agree. And I want to amplify, Michael, your point that you just read, and the idea of the loss of sort of discourse that guides us forward. If you did not see the documentary by White House photographer Pete Souza, The Way I See It, it's worth looking up. For us, I put a link in the chat, which hopefully leads you to it. He was a photographer for the Reagan White House as well as for Obama's White House, and also stayed with that and during the transition from the Obama White House to the Trump White House. And he just talks about the challenges that that office faces, and in his recounting through history, and the nature of the person in that office and how really vital it is that they have that broader view, right, and more inclusive view for the country. Anyway, Pete Souza, Souza, do an internet search. The Way I See It, it's definitely worth your time.
Yeah, it was excellent. You really get a view of the people in the White House as people, you know, what they're really like. And I thought it was fascinating. It's a great, great special.
Thank you. You know, it that reminds me that I've never seen this before out of a major media outlet, but I was really blown away, really, by the New York Times Sunday Review, which dedicated its entire section to endorsing Biden and repudiating Trump for some of these personal character gaps that has led to such, in my opinion, bad government. They talked about, they had six issues, and I thought it's important to kind of summarize what some of these major issues are in this election. One is his constant lies and his unapologetic corruption, profiting from the presidency, you know, at every turn. Two is this demagoguery, going around saying things like liberate Michigan and punch him in the face, I'll pay your legal bills, those kinds of things that incite division and hatred and violence. Three, his fake populism, pretending to be for the common man and then betraying them and passing these tax cuts for the wealthy and doing a little bit of job, you know, bringing back to America, maybe a little bit of that, but not near as much as he imagined he could do. Four, his incompetent statesmanship, alienating his allies and courting tyrants. And five, his super spreader agenda, in which his own ego and self-interest take priority over public health.
Yeah.
And so we have some choices to make here before us. And I personally am very, very hopeful about it. How are y'all feeling about the election?
Nervous.
What would you say to our voter? I'm sorry. What'd you say?
Nervous.
Nervous. How y'all feeling?
I've never been so happy to cast a vote.
Your ballot should be in your box.
It's going today.
Get it in
vote
early.
Vote with a vengeance.
Vote with a vengeance. I like it. Michael, yes. Any last words?
Nah, well put. Nice show. Well, thank you, Lynn.
Fun to gather with groups of neighbors or friends to fill out your ballot. It's a fun way. Yeah. Have a little ballot party. Gathering under five people. But it does make it fun. And I too, and Kevin, add to this, thestranger.com if you want some entertainment around each issue. And has some great recommendations as well as a lot of humor, and fusewashington.org.
Okay, we've gone over, guys.
Thank you all.
See you next week.
I hear that.